This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Americans are struggling.
People are seeing their wage increases eaten up by inflation.
Lives are at stake.
Are there any limits on abortion you would find appropriate?
I don't believe so.
The border is wide open.
It's open because we enter, we come in.
Our streets are unsafe.
Every day gets scarier.
The government is weaponized.
MAGA Republicans represent an extremism.
And so much more. These are the issues we're facing in the 2022 midterm elections.
It's me, Jesse. Let's talk about these midterms, huh? Because there are big, world-changing things going on right now. And I've told you before, and I'm not going to change my tune on this ever, the midterms are critical. They are. They are critical that we win as many seats as possible. Even if we do, we have a long, long, long road to hoe to unpack a government that is so rotted and corrupted, it may not be salvageable. But we do have, we have a lot to dig into, and we have a lot of things we need the low-T GOP to dig into after we give them a victory. We have to demand these things. Remember, our elected representatives, they are pathetic losers. Most of them are lifetime losers. They were losers, they've been losers their whole lives. So they don't go to Washington and act the way you want them to act. You think we're sending warriors back there to Washington, D.C., or at least that's what you want. That's what I want. No, we send losers and weenies back there. So we have to be their strength, meaning we have to browbeat them into doing things we want done. Things like, oh, I don't know, attacking the people who have intentionally opened up our border. This is what's so wild, and it's gonna come into play on all five of these issues. We're about to go over five midterm issues, and we have great guests and all that stuff tonight. What's so wild about this is it's not that Democrats are failing at these things. It's that they're intentionally destroying these things. You know, do you know that your money, you went to work today, you earned some money. You know that the money that you're paying the government, it's being used to keep the border wall from being built? This government is intentionally keeping the border open. The DHS secretary, that's the head of the Department of Homeland Security. I know you already know this, but he is a lifelong open borders guy. We took a guy who believes borders should be open and we put him in charge of securing the borders?
And speaking of the border,
is the border safe? Now I was watching a news channel and they were talking about an invasion was happening and I got a little concerned.
Look, the border is secure. The border, we are working to make the border more secure. That has been a historic challenge.
You know what the most amazing thing about that interview was? Okay, so we have that hack communist loser up there conducting the interview. That's a friendly interview. He even made some funny joke. Ha, 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 I heard it's an evasion. Ha, ha, ha. It's really funny to him. And he gave Mayorkas this softball. And even then, Mayorkas, well, I don't know. The border, it is secure, but could be more secure. Good news is, if we get Republicans in there with some spine, we can actually impeach the DHS secretary who's intentionally keeping the border open. That's issue number one. Issue number two, well, that was issue number five. Quit! Issue number four is the military. This is not something we think about a lot. And I'll tell you why we don't think about it a lot. We're used to winning, or at least not losing. We're used to having the best military out there. We're used to being number one when it comes to military power. And we're not used to, you realize it is the norm for other nations around the world, the norm, the vast, 99% of them, you know what they've known their whole lives? Oh man, I don't think our military can defeat that military. Oh, I know we can't defeat that military. They've had to know the fear that comes with having a military that can be beaten. You, an American, you've never known that. I don't care how old you are. You've never known that. I've never known that. I'm 41 years old. We're going to know that one day. You know that, right? Before the day they bury me, we will know that the United States military is not number one anymore. And it's being done intentionally. That's what's so crazy about it. It's being done on purpose from within the inside. We have a military so out of focus on what matters and so laser focused on what doesn't matter that it's going to take decades to put this thing back together. We talk all the time about the hard purge of the military. They still have a vaccine mandate. With everything we know now about the effectiveness or lack thereof of the vaccine, about we know everything about the dangers it poses to people. They still have a vaccine mandate. Well, okay, all the Republicans are getting out and no new Republicans are going to join to be mandated to take that. That's the hard purge. The soft purge is we now have the LGBTQ white people suck military. And guess what? Once again, anyone on the right's getting out. Anyone on the right who's 17, maybe wants to fight for his country, he's not going to join. Our military is now so feckless, so directionless, so lost. They won't do anything about China, our number one geopolitical foe in the world. They won't do anything about China buying up farmland right by our military bases.
Given the fact that known adversary, in the case of China, foreign buyers are buying up U.S. real estate, in some cases farms around military installations, is this on the administration's radar? And what is being done, perhaps, to study this or to protect Americans from making sure that homes remain affordable and so on?
I think the question of home ownership is a little bit out of my swim lane, but
particularly when it comes to around military installations.
Yeah, I'm probably not the right person to ask about home ownership here in the United States.
This isn't about home ownership. This is about buying up land around military installations. Is that a concern to this administration?
Go ahead, April.
I sent this to your office last week. They've had a week to look at this, including the article.
Okay, we can get back to you afterwards. We're going to move on. Go ahead, April.
He wouldn't answer the question? We'll take a look at it after. The dog ate my homework. We'll get back to you. Wouldn't even answer the question. Which brings us to issue number three. I know that you and me, we sit down every day and we talk about big issues. Border, right? Military. We talk about the FBI. We talk about all these things. But here's the truth. The truth is, people are watching their lives, their standard of living go down, and that's something many people have never experienced in their lives. Most of us have experienced a steady improvement, maybe a little blip here or there, in our standard of living. get older, make a little more money, move on up in the world, you know, like the Jeffersons. Not now. Right now, we're watching the worst inflation we've seen in 40 years, and every indication is it's about to get much, much, much worse. You can tell because they're raising interest rates. And not only do we have it, the President of the United States doesn't think this really big deal about it.
People are shocked by their grocery bills. What can you do better and faster?
Well, first of all, let's put this in perspective. Inflation rate month to month was just an inch, hardly at all.
You're not arguing that 8.3 is good news.
No, I'm not saying it's good news, but it was 8.2 or 8.2 before. I mean, it's not. I can make it sound like all of a sudden, my God, it went to 8.2%.
It's the highest inflation rate, Mr. President, in 40 years.
I got that. But guess what we are? We're in a position where for the last several months, it hasn't spiked. It has just barely, it's been basically even.
We're in serious trouble. Now, where did all this trouble come from? I mean, how do we turn into a country that's this? What happened to us? What happened to America, if you want to really boil it down? I mean, we look at all the insanity from government to the administrative state to entertainment to, I mean, the sports world. But how did any of that happen? How did all this happen? The truth is, the most devastating thing we allowed the communists to take over in this country is actually the education system, because everything flowed from there. Everything. How did the communists take over corporate America? Aren't they supposed to all be about money? Well, they were until we let the communists take over Harvard and Stanford. How did everyone in the administrative state turn into such a communist activist? Well, we let them take over the education system. Remember, you filter your children through this system. A nation's education system is everything. If children are taught from a very young age that America sucks, America's evil, America's racist, America deserves to be brought to its knees, and they go through 16 years of that kind of an education system, that's going to affect the entire nation. That's filtering the water of your country through a dirty jockstrap. And those were the teachers that have been teaching your kids. These are the teachers who are currently teaching your kids.
So at the start of a semester, I ask my students for their pronouns, a reminder that they are not preferred, but they are the pronouns that we should be addressing them by. And I also ask them to tell me if I can use their pronouns in front of the class, in front of other teachers, and when I call home, because everyone is in a different part of their journey, and we need to be able to respect that.
I've been doing some reading this summer, and so I thought I would share a couple of books, because you have a little bit of time left to do some reading. I also read Jack, Not Jackie by Erica Silverman. Phenomenal read. So if you're a K-1, 2, 3 even, it's a really good read called Jack, Not Jackie. And I really enjoyed that, and I'm excited it'll be on our shelves in the media center this fall.
You have a mind to keep me quiet, and although you can try, better men have hit their knees and bigger men have died.
What do you think the future of the country looks like when those are the people teaching your kids? And that actually brings us perfectly to number one. Oh, I'm worried about inflation and the border and the military and the teachers. I'm worried about all these things. There is nothing more dangerous that's happening in the United States of America right now than what is happening in your administrative state. You see, what you've heard, especially for the last 6 years or so, is a steady drumbeat. The official platform of the Democratic Party is that you are an enemy of the state. You're an enemy of the state. You're a Nazi. You're a white supremacist. You're a threat to democracy. The President of the United States called you as much.
Respect to conservatives, like Federal Circuit Court Judge Michael Ludwig, has called Trump and the extreme MAGA Republicans, quote, a clear and present danger to our democracy. But while the threat to American democracy is real, I want to say as clearly as we can, we are not powerless in the face of these threats. We are not bystanders in this ongoing attack on democracy.
Why do they do that? Why do they call you an enemy of the state? a clear and present danger to America. Why? What's the purpose of all of it? Well, one, they want to signal to their street communist base, you know, the BLMs, the Antifa, the losers, the low-life scum of society. They want to signal to them that it's open season to commit acts of violence on you. And two, more importantly, they want to be able to justify taking all those guns the federal government has and pointing them at you. That's why what you see now is an ongoing, continuous effort to make you an enemy of the country so they can smash you. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. My friends Ryan Gurdusky and Terry Schilling are going to join me next.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
My issues aren't everyone's issues. And I don't just mean my personal issues. No, my campaign issues aren't everyone's issues. I don't know what wins and what loses. I lost two congressional races. Joining me now, my friend Terry Schilling, president of the American Principles Project, and Ryan Gurdusky, who's doing great things on school board races across the country with the 1776 Project PAC. All right, Ryan, start with you. I think the most dangerous issue in the country is the administrative state. I understand there are huge issues like inflation and the border, and I get that. I think if we have an FBI fully weaponized against the right, there is no more country. But maybe that's a loser on the campaign trail. What say you?
Yeah, I think that's something maybe for people who watch this program and maybe some other programs and who are very, very involved in Republican politics as a mobilizing, galvanizing issue. I think, though, for the average voter, the John Q. public, who is maybe not as engaged, who are still undecided who they're going to vote for, the economy is the number one issue. I mean, it is a really, really, really important thing. They do feel it constantly. But I would stress to Republican candidates and to Republican voters, it's not the most mobilizing issue for Republicans. It doesn't get their blood boiling as much as other issues. I would focus on the other big three, in my opinion, which is going to be crime, immigration, and education. I think those are the things that sit there and excite people. It's what led to Glenn Youngkin being elected over in Virginia. It came very close to Republicans winning in a number of other places. And the issue of crime, I mean, listen, it led to Republican mayors being elected in New York City and Los Angeles in the 90s. And I think now with viral videos, people can see crime incidents every single day, constantly. And it's a galvanizing thing where people don't feel safe, especially with these bail law reforms.
Terry, I hate to be Mr. Doom and Gloom, but I'm a natural cynic. Ryan's, of course, right. The crime led to somebody like Rudy Giuliani being elected in New York. I do not view us as being in a time of pendulum swings. I think the cities are going to descend into an endless black hole of violence, but I could be wrong. What say you?
No, I think that that's the big danger, right? A decline doesn't always mean there's going to be a rejuvenation, right? The decline usually leads to more decline. And what we're seeing in these blue cities, essentially, look, I'm from Illinois, right? So I'm very familiar with Chicago machine-style politics. I think what's happened is all of these blue cities and a lot of these blue states have replicated that Chicago machine-style election system to where the game's rigged. Right, you're never going to get a Republican governor elected to California. They've fixed the system. They've taken care of that. And what's going to happen is the more crime, the more destruction, the more people are going to be fleeing these cities, these states, and the more violence they experience, they're just going to leave. And they're going to go to the other states and keep voting this way. Decline is going to lead to more decline, unfortunately, especially with the state of the Republican Party today. Now, there is some rejuvenation. We do have the DeSantis of the world rising up, but they're still a minority, right? There's still a very small minority in the Republican Party, but I do think there's a huge opening for someone like that to take national charge and then maybe bring in the National Guard to some of these cities that are really having serious crime sprees and bring in some law and order and show people that there's another way.
Ryan, you mentioned crime being a big deal, and it obviously is a big deal in the election, but why is it such a big deal for Republicans? Like, I don't live in one of these big cities. I would never live in one of these holes. I can look and be horrified, but it's not a huge issue for me because the crime in my area is fine. I'm not worried about that. Nobody's pooping on the sidewalk out in front of my house. Why do Republicans care so much about this?
Well, if it was just in these big cities, I would agree with you. But crime is up 30% in rural America. Crime is up 40% in suburban America. And what elected Rudy Giuliani more than just the issue of crime as a whole was the fact that crime was being committed specifically against one very important group in the subject of New York City, which is Orthodox Jews, who voted heavily for Democrats for mayor and then flipped to vote heavily for Republicans and elected Republicans for 20 years in New York City. Well, Orthodox Jews continue to vote Republican, especially on national issues. But what other two groups now are seeing crime in their areas in huge numbers? Hispanics and Asian. These are the two issues, and they are not, unfortunately, leaving these cities in droves. They have to live there. I mean, many of them live working-class jobs. They don't have the ability to just sit there and have telecommunication jobs in suburbs. They have to live in cities. This is the issue. You're going to sit there and bring them. And also, by the way, if you're not going to compete in these big blue states, good luck winning the House back. Unless California delivers a dozen Republican congressmen, I mean, good luck. Same thing with New York, same thing with Illinois, same thing with New Jersey, same thing with a lot of these other states. If you just give up on blue states and you give up on these congressional districts in blue states, the ones that deliver in Long Island and upstate and Orange County and in the Central Valley of California with those Hispanic voters, you can't win the majority back. They're just, I mean, you can't fix it because within these big red states, you have Dallas and Texas and the growing suburbs of Dallas and Texas, which are all very, very blue. So I think that crime is a very, very important issue. And the fact that people see it every single day on their cell phone cameras, on their computers and on their social media accounts, I think it can be an incredibly galvanizing issue. And the fact that also, by the way, we see who's committing the crime every single solitary day in many of these major incidents. And let me tell you, we don't see the same demographics at Trump rallies.
Not wrong. Terry, all right, we're going to win back the midterms. All right, that's what this is all about. We're going to win the midterms. But who's going to win in the midterms? I want to win the midterms as much as the next man. I want these lunatics to stop being in control of Congress. What am I going to get? Strongly worded letters? Am I going to get hearings? Am I going to get any kind of action? Because you're going to have to forgive me if I don't have a ton of faith in the Republican Party.
Well, no, Jesse, I think this is something that we've talked about, and Ryan, I think we've talked about this as well. The problem with the Republican Party, the big weakness that they have is that they are not taken seriously by voters. Voters don't trust them to be an effective alternative or effective opposition to the Democratic Party. We've had time and time again where Republicans talk a big game, they make a lot of big promises, and then when they get into office, it's nothing, right? And you're kind of seeing this play out right now with abortion. Right. And I know that some people don't think abortion should be a big issue this election. There's no changing that. Democrats are going to go on offense and accuse you of putting women in jail. We can't even get a large amount of Republicans in the Senate to embrace a 15-week bill. That's halfway through the pregnancy almost. It's when the baby can feel pain. It's a no-brainer. It's where 60% of the Americans are. Yet all these Republican senators are staying silent on it. So look, I'm with you in the pessimism. My hope remains in this new crop of Republicans that are coming up. You know, the Blake Masters of the world, the J.D. Vances, the Adam Laxalts. These are new guys that are coming up, and they're very bold. They're serious, and they're tired of the way things have been running, and they want to make a serious change. And so I think we get more and those guys running. This is going to take a change in leadership. And I wouldn't expect anything too huge to come out of this next Congress, primarily because we'll have a Democrat president. But at the same time, there is a new generation of Republicans that are taking the stage. And I think they're much more serious and much more pessimistic like you and I. But they're also determined to make a change.
Ryan, I know change in leadership when it comes to a party, it's always lagging behind the base, right? You know, I want all the losers to leave. Well, that's a 10, 20 year process to slowly get all of them out. Is it happening though? Because it's not all bad news. It doesn't. We do have a great crop of guys coming up who I'm actually excited about. And I know there's still that loser Mitt Romney and those like him sitting in there, but they are slowly going away, right?
Well, I mean, listen, I mean, you might not like Mitch McConnell, but he's a man of a particular age and he won't be around forever. And there are the people who are their backbenchers, let's say, are not stars, are not able to wield power, I think, as substantial as him. So I think the Republican leadership will definitely have a major confrontation with its future in the very near term. I think that if you're looking for change and some hope, listen, Joe Biden has appointed 83 federal judges in his first 2 years as president, like more than 20 months as president, more than even Donald Trump did, more than any recent president has done. And they're very, very, very radical leftists. That slows down substantially if the Republicans take the Senate, even if moderates win the Senate. That slows down immensely. But if you're looking for massive change, where you're going to see it is in these governorships and in these state legislatures. I think Carrie Lake gives a lot of promise in Arizona. I think there's a number of people, even Brian Kemp, a lot of people don't like. Brian Kemp has done a lot of good things for the state of Georgia. And I think you have Ron DeSantis in Florida, and you have the state legislatures. You're going to see immense changes when it comes to, even social issues, education, crime, policing, the trans issues. Tennessee became the first state to ban performing a transgender operation on a minor. I think you'll see that replicated across the board. And a lot of these loser Republicans, like the governor of Arkansas, who veto those bills, are being replaced by much stronger, even if they're more moderate, they are more right-wing of the versions of the people they're replacing. So there's a lot of hope you had, especially at the local level. And that's where your vote matters the most.
Amen. Remember how we take back America, legal and local. Legal and local, that's the solution. Ryan, Terry, thank you both so much. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Jesse.
All right. We're not done. Hang on. Joining me now, my friend Selena Zito. Highly recommend you go sign up for her newsletter, author of the book The Great Revolt. Selena travels the back roads of this country, doesn't fly, doesn't take the highways. She was also the only person I know, only major media figure to tell everybody, Trump's going to win back in 2016. Everyone told her she was a nutball. And then because she's nicer than me, she refused to spike the football in everyone's face like I would have. Selena, all right, you're still on the same back roads. What are people out there saying?
They're very unhappy with Washington. I have not seen any evidence of this sort of support for Democrats that they've been talking about for the past month. I have seen it remain steady. They're very unhappy with the party in power. It has a lot to do with inflation and also out of control crime, but also the fentanyl crisis, which is, we all know, comes across the border. They're very, very out of touch with the lives of the people that they serve.
Okay, explain that to me. Fentanyl crisis. I obviously know about it. 100,000 overdoses last year. It's horrific. I know the things I hear. Why are people on the back roads in swing states upset about fentanyl?
Well, because it's not just in, it was always sort of this white Appalachia problem, right? Places where manufacturing had disappeared and never came back, and people were stuck and they didn't have anywhere to go. It's now in the suburbs. It's also in the big cities. It's everywhere. It's infiltrating their children's schools. It's impacting their children at their colleges, and it's in their neighborhood. And when it gets that personal and that real, people react, and they want answers, and they're not getting any answers.
Selena, Jen Psaki echoed basically what you just said on TV and talked about how crime is a major problem for Democrats.
If it is a referendum on the president, they will lose, and they know that. They also know that crime is a huge vulnerability for Democrats. I would say one of the biggest vulnerabilities.
Okay, here's my question, Selena. It was obviously all Democrat support groups burning down American cities in 2020, and people didn't run to the polls and vote Republican then. But why the anger at Democrats now?
Well, actually, in 2020, they did. They just didn't vote for Donald Trump. So you look down ballot, and Democrats already saw their problem. They knew what their problem was going into this election. They faced that problem in 2021 as well, but they tried to pretend that they could deal with it. They tried to pretend that they could go around it. But this has been a problem that's been escalating, and it has been drawing suburban voters back to Republicans because of the way that the Democrats have handled crime. Republicans won down ballot in 2020 in huge amounts. People just didn't pay attention to that because Joe Biden won.
Selena, do you think there's a chance we're going to have any kind of a flip in cities, in the urban areas? And no, I don't think I'm going to wake up the day after Election Day and Philadelphia is going to be blood red, but any kind of a shift back towards the right? Because frankly, they're the ones who are really being ravaged by this crime.
So for voters that have historically voted Democrat, in particular minority voters, this is something that takes a generation to change. However, what they will do is not show up. And that's just as bad for Democrats as if they vote Republican. And I think that's what you're going to see. You saw that in 2016 in Philadelphia. They just sat on their hands and said, we don't like anybody. Neither of these people is our person. And I definitely think you are going to see that in major cities, not just in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, but across the country.
Selena, well, here, I'll give it to Kamala Harris to explain what I think is their strategy for this November.
Extremist so-called leaders across our nation began to pass and enforce laws to criminalize doctors, nurses, healthcare providers. And these so-called extremist leaders are passing laws to criminalize these folks. Passing laws to punish women.
Okay, the extreme thing. This is very clearly something that has gone out as the talking point in the Democratic Party. Everyone remembers Biden's speech. There was Dome talking about it. Every Democrat throughout Congress talks about this all the time. I know they're trying to motivate their base. Does that message, look, I'm not one of these swing voters. I know where I'm voting. Does that message resonate with these Rust Belt swing voters at all?
No, it doesn't, because they're talking about people that are friends of the voters they're trying to attract, right? And their family members and their neighbors. And they look at these, at their neighbors and say, well, I know they're Republican, but they're not extreme. And so it's a non-starter to get a swing voter. And I'm sorry I lost my voice.
It is okay. Selena Zito, go to selenazito.com, sign up to a newsletter. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you so much.
All right. We're not done. We still got a ton to go. Glenn Youngkin fascinates me. I'm hearing really good things. Hang on.
I think this is a moment for the Republican Party to recognize exactly what I recognized last year, was this is not an or moment, but an and moment. I mean, we brought together Virginians last year, forever Trumpers, never Trumpers, independents, Democrats. We won the Latino vote, the Asian vote, the largest voter turnout for black Virginians that anybody can remember to vote for Republican. I mean, I think this is the future of the Republican Party, which is to recognize that we have to come together and these common sense kitchen table issues that are on the forefront of everybody's mind, inflation, schools, safe communities, an economy that isn't stealing everybody's hardworking money through inflation, but gives them a job.
So
this is where the Republicans, this is the Republicans who that we can win.
I had a little birdie tell me recently, somebody who would know, that Glenn Youngkin is a stud, that he's viewed nationally as this kind of maybe a little milquetoast guy, that is not the case at all, that he is a severely impressive human being and somebody we should be watching out for as a potential star. Joining me now is someone who probably know, Matt Walking. He was a spokesman for Youngkin's successful 2021 gubernatorial campaign. Matt, I hear good things about your boy.
He's doing a great job as governor, and thank you for having me, Jesse. I appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Okay, how did he do it? Because I love Virginia. I think it's the most beautiful state. Best four seasons in the country, by the way. I've lived in Virginia before, but there's no question the upper part of Virginia, that it got that D.C. commie sprawl, and it's been Democrat. It's been pretty consistently Democrat, and now along comes Glenn Youngkin. He's not exactly some middle-of-the-road Republican, yet he's governor. How did he do that?
Well, he did do two key things. In December 2020, so almost a year before the election, he tested which policy issues were best suited to win the primary election and the general election. You know, sometimes we see candidates get knocked off message in the primary, and it really comes back to hinder them in the general election. So it's all about message discipline, and knowing where key boundaries are is very important. And Governor Youngkin did that very well. Second, Youngkin set out to ask everyone for their vote. He didn't want to take anything for granted or leave anyone out. So, you know, from counties in Southwest Virginia that hadn't seen a Republican candidate in a decade or more, to Asian Americans and other ethnicities and religious groups in Northern Virginia that don't typically hear from a Republican candidate, he went there, and he did it early, not just when the general election started. And so he had a robust coalition and messaging targeting operation to make sure that he was talking to all of those key voters and making sure we were winning people over. That's what he had to do to win in Virginia, and he did it.
Every state's different. Every state has different values, different things that people can campaign on. If you're campaigning in Alabama, you can campaign on abortion. There's no question about that. That's not the case in Washington state, right? Every state tells its own story. What about Virginia can we translate nationally to? Because that can be difficult. People think, well, he won here, he can win everywhere. That's not always the case. What translates nationally?
Sure. Well, what Youngkin did, I think Virginia is a little bit of a microcosm of the country at large, because you're right. You do have more liberal areas near Washington, D.C., and then you have very conservative areas in other parts of the state that more closely resemble Alabama or Georgia. But Glenn told his story and defined his own brand very early. And so courting independents and Democrats, it started with giving them a permission slip to support a Republican. And so that allowed him later to then take his message about economic issues and pocketbook issues, kitchen table issues, safety and crime, quality and education to all of those people. And it allowed them to be receptive to his policy messages when they knew that, okay, this was a guy that grew up here in Virginia Beach and worked hard and became a successful businessman. And he's just a regular dad, just like a lot of my neighbors and maybe myself.
Matt, Virginia itself, is the state going red because of the radicalism of Democrats? I know we want to give, especially you, I mean, all of us, we want to give Glenn Youngkin all the credit he can, but Terry McAuliffe, I mean, he basically wrapped up a Christmas gift for him when he stood up on stage and told parents to butt out of education. What kind of an idiot would say that? Yet that's the position of the National Democratic Party now. Are they pushing people into our lap? I've said, I think older Democrats are a huge portion of what the right can be, because they look at the horror of what the modern party is. They don't recognize that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the short answer is yes. They are pushing them more towards Republicans for sure. And that became extremely evident in Virginia last year. But it's going on right now in these midterm races all over the country, where you see people that Democrats running for federal office who are far outside the mainstream. You know, you think of John Fetterman in Pennsylvania as one great example of that. And so it's definitely a big factor.
School boards. That was hot when Glenn was running. Every other day you'd turn on the news and you'd see a new parent screaming out some school board, chewing out some school board. It seems that has faded. Is it really faded as an issue, or is that still something that's a winner?
Well, it's something that Governor Youngkin is still working with parents in Virginia, even today, the issue of Democrats pushing radical gender theory into classrooms. And so that's going on in Virginia today. I would say back in 2021, there was an added element. It was the pandemic closures that had occurred, and Democrats and teachers unions not being willing to open the schools. That was a huge issue that drove parents to school board meetings. And then we also, of course, had the issue of critical race theory. And Governor Northam's policy, the previous governor, Democrat governor of Virginia, he had told school boards statewide that they had to adopt a transgender policy for schools that allowed kids to, choose their genders without their parents' knowledge, and then go into an opposite sex locker room or bathroom, and without their parents even knowing about it. And so Governor Youngkin recently rolled back that policy. He said, no, we're gonna make sure parents are informed. And there's currently a backlash from some Democrats in Virginia. The vast majority of school districts in Virginia didn't appreciate that Democrat policy. And so a lot of school board meetings were focused on that as well. And so Governor Youngkin is currently working on that issue and returning sanity to the classroom.
Matt, who do you see out there, the candidates running for Senate, maybe House, maybe Governor, who do you see out there that you think to yourself, now that's a guy who's on message and nailing it, and who do you see that's like, they're all over the place?
Well, I think, I mentioned John Fetterman earlier. I think Dr. Oz's campaign had a few stumbles over the summer, but he's recovered very well and is pressing ahead really, really hard right now. And I think he's doing a much better job than they were. And I think that I do think that Fetterman, with his own, is having his own struggles. And so I think it's looking pretty good for Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania, and that's encouraging. But in terms of other Republicans across the country that are doing this, Governor Youngkin has been able to get on the campaign trail a little bit and support other Republican governors running for office, supporting Brian Kemp in Georgia and Kerry Lake in Arizona. And all of them, I would say, you're kind of seeing a lot of what Youngkin talked about in his race last year seeping into those races, these kitchen table issues. And I think the party as a whole is really shifting that direction, as they should, because right now voters, the top thing on their mind is inflation and our precarious economy that we're in because of Joe Biden's policies. And so I think that the more Republicans focus on those issues, the better they will turn out in November.
Matt, appreciate it, man.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, we got final thoughts. Next. Those are the issues on the midterms. What are we going to get? What are we going to get after the midterms? Okay, so we're going to win. How big are we going to win? I don't know. And what are we going to do with it once we get those victories? Are we going to tackle the big five issues plus more? Or are we just going to yell and scream? Are we going to use taking over the House of Representatives as some kind of a fundraising effort where you get a new email every week? Hey, support Congressman Jerkwater. He was mean to the FBI for 5 minutes. Results. Remember, after the midterms, Lord willing, we win in the midterms. Demand results. All right, we'll do it again.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fia is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.